Of Attica is that it's a four-day rebellion that unfolded largely within Attica prison, and that the demands were primarily oriented towards improving prison conditions. I don't think that that's wrong. I just think that it's incomplete. My book shows that Attica was a protracted struggle that lasted for at least 13 months, that it traversed multiple prisons, and that it was revolutionary and abolitionist in its politics, that it was informed by anti-colonial movements unfolding throughout the world, and that it had material links to those movements. Part of the response to Attica was massive repression and violence, as many of your viewers will know. But the focus on the intense violence waged by the state often obscures the extent to which reforms were used as a counterinsurgency method designed to suppress political consciousness and suppress activism. And so one of those reforms was the proliferation of solitary confinement, as I just mentioned. Other reforms were just the proliferation of prisons in general, which were used as a method to separate out more prisoners so that they couldn't organize. But importantly, the proliferation of prisons was also used as a way to market prison growth and development to white rural populations whose economies had been ravaged by deindustrialization. So it was a way to sort of shore up support for rural white workers who had very few other employment options, especially in light of the fact that during the repression at Attica, the New York State assault force that went in to suppress the rebellion also killed several of the guards, 10 guards. And so the building of prisons became a marketing tool to try to build support for prison development among rural white populations. And much of this is what we're dealing with now in terms of the some of the demands and conversations around what's happening with the strike have to do with animosity around the recent closure of prisons that has been unfolding in New York over the past decade.
And you mentioned earlier solitary confinement used as a means of political repression of revolutionary movements. Could you talk about what your book found in terms of Attica, specifically the level of political activism that occurred in the prisons? I know when I was in the Young Lords back in the 70s, we actually had members in Attica as part of the Inmates Liberation Front. But the Black Panther Party, the Nation of Islam, many other political groups, Republic of New Africa, had membership and developed membership in Attica and other prisons as well.
Absolutely. And the Inmates Liberation Front is discussed in my book. I mean, part of what I want people to understand is that prisons in the United States are best understood as institutions of low intensity warfare that masquerade as apolitical instruments of crime control. And so part of what we see in the late 1960s is the use of prisons to repress and contain and neutralize political activism on the outside, groups like the Black Panthers and the Young Lords, as you just mentioned. But in fact, what happens is that this strategy backfires, and prisons, in fact, become schools of revolutionary political education. And these groups, in fact, proliferate in the prisons. And that politicization interacts with the intense repression that these groups were facing, which gives rise to these different forms of rebellion that emerge all throughout the prisons. Attica happened to be one of the most brutal prisons in New York State, and in fact, in the country, where many of the most political and most intellectual, and most charismatic people were transferred and repressed, and it turned into a tinderbox.
Professor Burton, that's where the Wildcat prison guard strike is. Jose Saldana, we just have 20 seconds.
They have engaged in illegal activity, and they will continue to escalate that illegality. We are building a movement to dismantle this racial brutality. But in the meantime, we have to get people out of that brutal system. We have legislation, elder parole, fair and timely, second look at. These legislation will help relieve people out of these systems of brutal oppression and unite them back to their families.
I want to thank you both for being with us. Jose Saldana, director of RAP, and Arsanmi Burton, author of Tip of the Spear, Black Radicalism, Prison Repression, and the Long Attica Revolt. He's also professor of anthropology at American University. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Stay tuned for the One World Community Radio program on 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, 88.7 FM WRHU, Hempstead Radio, Hofstra University, 88.1 FM WCWP, Brookville, LIU Post, 88.3 FM WRCT, Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon University, 88.3 FM WVCR, Loudonville, Siena College, 98.1 and 105.9 FM WKZE Salisbury Red Hook, and around the world at WRHU.org. This is One World Community Radio, coming up next on your favorite community radio station.
Program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio, Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Mahwanana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts, Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now, Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
To the classics.
WRHU Hempstead, 89.5 Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh. You're listening to the One World Radio Show on the One World Radio Network. I'm your host, Cody Millar, broadcasting from Pittsburgh. Joined with me from New York is Ricky Hubert, and from Cape Town, Lydia Marquana. Joining us today is Demi from Magical Hijinks. Demi, thank you so much for joining us today on the One World Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
How are y'all doing this beautiful morning and afternoon? Beauty of broadcasting in multiple time zones is we got a variety of weathers.
We're all right, Cody. How are you? How is everything? We're just saying we're all in school zone. I'm a student. Cody's a teacher. So everybody's at like a different stage of the game in terms of the school year.
It's going all right. Although it's a little cold at 13 degrees Fahrenheit right now. Although it feels more like it's zero.
On my side, it is a super hot, like very, very hot. I couldn't even go outside the way it is so hot. We are on 30 degrees today. So yeah, it's blazing hot.
Well, I'm annoyed with the weather and I'm ready for it to not be so windy and cold. I don't mind the cold, but once you add these horrible winds we've been having, it's really just the tip of the iceberg for me. I'm done. I'm ready to leave the area for a few days.
Well, you get to leave the area quite a lot, Demi, with the work you do with Magical Hijinks. For those who don't know, tell us what you do, why we brought you on the show today with your work doing Magical Hijinks.
My YouTube channel and social media and business is Magical Hijinks. I am a theme park and travel YouTuber and content creator, and even though I am New York based, I travel down to Orlando mostly because that's where most people go down to vacation, the biggest destination for theme parks in the world. And every few weeks I head down there and I create videos in Walt Disney World, Universal, sometimes SeaWorld. And then I get to also go to other fun places too. Like this past year, I went to the opening of the brand new land called Fantasy Springs in Tokyo Disney Sea. I've done Disney cruises. I've gone to the California parks. And I love covering some smaller parks as well. And parks like Hershey and King's Dominion, Busch Gardens, any theme park you got, I'm happy to head over there. And I love being able to help people plan their trips and also bring people to the parks to escape a little in this world that we're in, that we could all use a little escape.
Now, Demi, when you're going on these trips to generate content, how long are you like in Orlando or other places for?
You know, it really depends on what's going on. So I typically go to Orlando. My schedule is usually based off of what's going on in the park. So, for example, in January, there was a mix of a couple of things. So I was there a little bit longer than maybe mostly in January, because in January we have Epcot's Festival of the Arts. So I usually base, you know, my time going down for around like the big events like that. And that's one of the most popular events that I cover. And then also this year was the opening of a brand new hotel for Universal Orlando called Stellanova Resort for the upcoming new theme park, Universal's Epic Universe, which opens May 22nd. So I was there from January 16th all the way to the 22nd. Because I had to wait for the opening. But then I had to go back down only a few weeks later to cover Mardi Gras in Universal Orlando. But for that, I was only there. I only needed to go for 2 nights because it wasn't that much to cover, you know, to one to two day thing to cover. And then I go back down in March for Epcot's Flower and Garden Festival. But I usually stay around like 4 days. So it's because I'm not just covering those big events. I'm also making lots of other content and other videos. And basically what I do is I plan out my days and I create my content, make all my videos, and then I take them back home with me to New York and I edit them and I release them twice a week.
Demi, no, I don't think this is something where you wake up one morning and say, I'm going to do this. It's kind of something that you figure as you go along. What made you realize that this kind of work that you do with Magical Hijinks was something you had to explore for yourself?
You know, actually, it kind of was that. I work in theater in New York City. I've been working in professional theater since I'm 17 years old. And then back in 2020, when we shut down, I don't know if anyone was aware, but there was this thing called a global pandemic and we were stuck at home. And I wasn't a person that grew up going to the parks. I was raised by a single mom and we did our little regional parks, but you know, I always loved amusement parks and theme parks. So back in 2016, when I went with my boyfriend to Universal and Disney as just like a little vacation, I kind of started hyperfixating on the parks. So when I would be home, I would be watching videos or reading things all about all the parks and I'd get really excited about it. We went to Paris for our honeymoon in 2018. And we also got to go to Disneyland Paris. And then for my 25th birthday in December 2019, we went to Disney. And it was my first time going to not just Magic Kingdom, because that's all we did back in 2016. But that was my first time. I can't even believe it. It's so recent that my first time in Epcot, Hollywood Studios, and Animal Kingdom was in 2019, December. And I left that trip thinking, I need to figure out a way to come here more. I love this. I love this place. And then we shut down in March, and I had no idea what was going to happen for the future of theater, or the future, I guess, in general. And I started making like an Instagram first. You don't know what you're going to start. You just start something and you figure it out as you go. And I had an Instagram with a totally different name. And I was just kind of posting pictures of my trips to Disney and Universal and just kind of starting out with that community. And then I decided, because we were home, I was going to start making cooking videos of Disney Parks food that you can make at home. I thought that was a little bit different than just like, you know, something else, but it's something that I could do. And at the time, I actually didn't even put myself on camera. I was never a person that was in front of a lot of people. I was a stage manager, still am on the side, but I was doing cooking videos of overhead cooking style. So I started that, and I realized like maybe 3 months into this, what am I doing? I hate cooking. I hate cooking. And then they announced the opening of the reopening of Walt Disney World and the reopening of Universal. And I kind of just looked at my husband and I said to him, I think I'm going to go. Literally, that's literally what I said. I just had this bug in me. And, you know, it was going to be my first time on camera. And you just kind of have to do it if you think you want to do it. And I knew, like, maybe this is something I could do. So I went to the reopening in, what was it, July of 2020. And I covered the reopenings of every parks. I got an annual pass before they actually, it was amazing because they stopped selling annual passes. I got it just in time. And I covered the reopenings. And then I put out the videos and they were doing really well. And then I was posting on socials. And then in October, I rebranded to Magical Hijinks because originally I was the Disney Kitchen because I was cooking, right? And after that, and you can still see all those old videos on the channel. They're still there. After that, it was like October. And I was like, you know, what if I went back down? I could do a little bit more. And yeah, that's kind of what happened. I just started going down more and more. And then I kind of started gearing the schedule toward the big events, like I said, to, you know, being down there. And I would go, I'll go for like, you know, 3 to 4 nights usually is like kind of what I roughly do. And I started making all the content. And now here we are almost, you know, 4.5 years later, almost 5 years, which is crazy to me. And 21,000 subscribers on YouTube and almost 70,000 followers on TikTok and, you know, all on the socials as well. And I've built a really great community of people, and being able to not only help people, but to bring them joy, especially during those rough times during the pandemic, it was, you know, really rewarding to be able to just make people feel good in the, you know, for at least for, you know, 20 minutes into a video, you know.
What was it like traveling during the pandemic and going to the reopenings of all those places? I assume that had to be a very like joyful occasion for the devotees of those parks. Can you explain what that atmosphere was like?
It was really crazy. So I did everything as correct as I possibly could. I was and I still am a big, you know, person of like, you know, keeping people safe with, you know, with the pandemic. So I literally, you know, I would fly down. I had a real N95 mask, you know, from my husband works. He's an engineer. And so sometimes he'll be in construction zones. So he has the real ones. So I'd be wearing 2 real N95 masks and a face shield. I had my wipes. On the planes, we were distancing. You know, it was definitely a risk, but I did everything as well as I could. And I would go and I would come back and I would even isolate from my husband for, you know, many days. I would do the 2 weeks away from everybody else. I was really committed to making sure that I was following the guidelines. But in the parks, you know, it was really kind of an interesting time, and I'll never forget it because it was so empty. And like, you know, selfishly, it was great how empty it was because you were able to do so much, right? But it was really I'll never forget walking into Magic Kingdom the day of the parks reopening, and they had all the cast members and everyone's all in their COVID gear, but like clapping that everything is back open. Well, not everything, I shouldn't say everything. Still nothing, not even everything is back open yet. they'll keep using COVID as an excuse to keep things closed for another 20 years. But it was really just like this community of people coming together to just like be so happy to be back in this space that brings so much joy in a time where it was so scary. Like, I think we forget because it, you know, it has been 5 years now, which is insane to me. It's been 5 years, but it was such a scary time. Everything was so uncertain, and to be in a place where you can just pretend that everything is kind of okay for a few hours, it was really magical. And not only was I like, you know, covering just like the reopenings of operations, but just like, you know, what the safety measures were. Like, they used to have, and I wish they kept them because they were great. They had these hand washing stations all over the park, and I wish they kept them because, listen, it's Orlando. It's hot. It's sticky. There's snacks that are all over my hands all the time. I would love to have an accessible hand washing station like anytime. And you know, I was just covering to see, like, you know, if you were thinking maybe coming during, you know, this uncertain time, like, you know, people, especially the locals, would want to come. Like, you know, people were nervous, like, rightfully so. And like, what were the measures that they were taking? And so I would show that. And I did that at a couple other parks as well. I did that over in Hershey Park. I eventually did it in Universal, and I got my annual pass there. And then I even got to do it at Six Flags Great Adventure in New Jersey. And you, like, and it was very, very different, the safety measures, and I'll never forget that. So it's very interesting to see the differences between the parks during that time, because, you know, there's, you know, when bigger parks, you have a bigger park, there's more money to put into things. But, you know, it was important at the time too to cover that aspect of what was going on. And I think that's also why my channel kind of took off pretty early as well, because I was, and I still am, my channel is built on honesty and, you know, making sure that you have the best trip possible. These things are that you go to are expensive, and, you know, you should be able to believe and know exactly what you're going to be getting into if you decide to go here. So that was the basis, and that's still my motto today. Is I'm here to help you know exactly what to expect and know how to let you know how to spend your money, and also help you know what's happening in these parks and how to navigate these parks, because they make it so difficult, specifically at Disney. And like, you literally need to have like a degree, I feel like, to be able to go to Disney. There are certain parks where you could just walk in and you have a decent day. But Disney, if you walk in blind, oh no, you'll have fun, of course, but it's going to be a lot more challenging to navigate, and you're going to end up missing out on a lot of different things that you could have done that would have probably made your trip a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm. And Demi, talking about having to do research and look at the theme park that you're going to, like you mentioned, going to Disney is like having a degree. Like, what could you say, you know, when you were doing your research, how do you research and develop the money tips, you know, saving tips for expensive destinations like Disney World? Because we like to travel, like we would love to see those places. But when we look at it, we're like, no, I don't have the budget. So how do we do it?
Yeah, well, you know, it's great that you said that. And especially, I come from a world like where I grew up with a single mom. We lived in a one bedroom apartment. You know, we didn't really have much. But I never really felt like that I had less than anyone, because you find joy in every, like, if I can find joy in most things, like, you know. So I think that I think that there's a lot of people that, you know, like, vacation a certain way, right? And I've discovered this in through my years of, like, for me, like, I don't mind $100 a night, you know, motel room, and staying with, you know, four, like, three of my friends, you know, or it's like, you know, two person per bed. Like, I don't mind roughing it. So everyone has like a threshold of like what they're willing to do to like go to a place and to save money. And for like, and I'm really like, even to this day, I've stayed in wonderful hotels, and I obviously loved being able to, you know, have that experience. To this day, I am a big fan of like, oh, well, where are the ways that we can save? And I think one of the biggest things is hotel, of course, airlines. I have a video on my Patreon about how I use my credit card points to basically you could use your credit card points to have an incredible Disney vacation. There are hotels that are not technically like a Disney hotel, but they are official Disney hotels that you get benefits that you can use points on. And then you have obviously offsite hotels that are nearby that it's going to save you a lot in the long run. Unfortunately, really the only, the biggest cost that's really hard to save unless maybe you find like a deal at like Sam's Club are the park tickets. And they just aren't getting any cheaper, unfortunately. But when you look at, when you're trying to save for a trip, that is, the biggest thing I could say is look at your credit card points. Look, where can you use your points for? And I think that's definitely the biggest hack. I also think that there is this stigma that, you know, no matter what, Disney will be expensive because, yeah, I mean, yes, but sometimes if people are so afraid to ever even look at the Disney website under special offers where you can possibly get deals for one of their hotels and their all-stars, which are all-star sports, music, and movies, they are the budget hotels and they're incredible. Like, and you're totally within the theming of Disney. You have free Disney transportation. And, you know, sometimes you can get it for like $120 a night. So it's really just having to do your research. And then for Universal, their budget hotels, Universal Endless Summer Dockside and Universal Endless Summer Surfside, they're like, honestly, like they're very nice hotels. Like it's, and you can get, again, deals pretty cheap. You have to look, it always depends on the time of year and utilizing off property, utilizing your credit card points is going to make a huge difference. You also have to factor in like transportation and look up like, is it worth it to rent a car? How much does Uber cost? You also have to understand, at least for the Orlando parks, once you're on Disney property, once you're on Universal property, you can use their transportation for free. Like you don't have to be staying on property to use Disney transportation. So if for me, I never rent a car. I Uber from the airport to my hotel. You could use Universal and Disney have third party companies that have these like shuttles if that's better for you. But I always find that Uber is definitely going to be the cheaper way for me, but that may not be for everyone. And then you also have to factor in if you have a child and a car seat and you have to be, if you're in an Uber, you're going to have a car seat to put in the Uber, you know, so you have to just kind of go over all of the facts. So sometimes it's easier and does come out cheaper for someone to stay on property if they have a child that young because they don't need a car seat for a child to go on a Disney bus or a monorail or a boat. And you have to look at all of your personal information and figure out what is the best way for you to save money. You could also even, I did a video on the public transportation bus to get from the airport to Disney. It's $2. It took about an hour. You get dropped off in Disney Springs. There are ways to save money here and there. You don't have to go in and buy Disney food or Universal food. You can bring your own food, pack your own lunch. Really the biggest expense when it comes to at least the Orlando parks, when you go to regional parks, it's definitely going to be a lot cheaper is the ticket prices. But even like bigger regional parks like Busch Gardens, Williamsburg and Dollywood, like your ticket costs are way less expensive than a Disney or Universal park ticket, especially a Disney park ticket. Universal is definitely a lot cheaper all around. I think people need to do your research, like what makes sense for you. You also have to factor in if you're going to the parks, you have to pay for parking if you don't have an annual pass, right? So it all comes down to what is right for you. Because people ask me all the time, I get comments all the time, well, what should I do? It's like, I don't know your life. Like I'm not a travel agent. I'm not here booking your trips. I'm here to help you like decide what's right for you. Obviously you can get travel agents. You know, travel agents are great within the Disney and Universal space because more than likely you don't have to pay them. They get commissioned by the parks and they do your whole trip for you. You know, it really just depends on who you are, your family, what your budget is. You know, people are like, oh, well, should I stay at an all-star or should I stay at Pop Century, which is technically a budget hotel, but it's more expensive than the all-stars. And it's like, well, I can't tell you, like, because I don't know what your budget is. You're going to spend a little more, but you're going to have the Skyliner. But what if you're afraid of heights? Then it's not great for you, because you have to take the Skyliner if you're staying at a Skyliner resort to Hollywood Studios and Epcot. Like, they don't run buses. You have to take the Skyliner. They only run buses if there's lightning. You have to really consider every little detail for you, what is best for you to how to vacation.
And talking about, like, the best time for you, I wanted to hear more, because you touched on time on that, you know, and I'm on the other side of the world. I would like to know, what is the best time off here to visit some of these theme parks and to avoid peak crowds and get better deals? Like, what is the best time you would recommend?
Ever since COVID, it has been really difficult to pinpoint this, because back in the day, you could say, oh, January, February is the best time to go. Recently, I would not say that. The parks have been incredibly busy. You have to factor in, especially if you're, you know, Universal, maybe a little less. But with Disney, you have like the Run Disney event in January. You have kids have winter break now. So then they go for winter break. Spring break is a definite no. I think personally, the sweet spot for me is the end of August. I would say not the last week, maybe like the third week of August. And I say this because the kids in Orlando are already back to school then. And I find the crowd levels to be pretty low. And Disney has decided to move Food and Wine to that last week of August. So you're in this spot where you don't have a festival. I know they're going to put it back. Last year they moved Food and Wine to the last week of August. And I can tell by the pricing right now that that's going to happen again, because when you look at the prices for hotels, all of a sudden that last week of August, the prices go up. Usually that sweet spot, that like third week of August, kids are back in school. Yeah, you're still going to have, like, you know, other crowds, but people are also afraid to go in August because it's very hot. So you have that problem as well. Also, I think May, I would say May is probably my personal favorite in the parks. I think you can find times where nothing is really major is happening. You'll be there during Flower and Garden Festival for Disney. May in Universal, there's really nothing happening because Mardi Gras ends at the end of March or the beginning of April. And they don't have any other, like, really big festival or anything in between. And so you could find some time there. It doesn't get as hot yet. It's kind of before hurricane season. Personally, I love spooky season. That is where I shine. So I love going the first or second week of September is also great. But then that's kind of when hurricane season is. So it's really difficult to pinpoint because you have crowds, but you also have to factor in weather. Like, it's... So even though you may be saving, you may end up being in a rainstorm, but you honestly can't really predict it anyway, because it's always going to rain at some point most of the time in Disney, unless you're kind of going in the cooler months. I still think January, if you're not going during the Run Disney week and maybe like not the opening of Festival of the Arts, that you'll find some good times. But it really has been incredibly difficult to pinpoint the best time for crowds and cheap. I would say, again, like May, that's sometimes in July you can find some sweet spots as well. But again, then you have to factor in the horrible 110 degree weather. Like, it's unbearable. I'll never forget 2 years ago, it was actually August. It was like the second week of August. And I was doing a tour of Caribbean Beach Resort, and it's huge resort. There's multiple neighborhoods. It took me days to cover it because it was so hot. I could not be outside for too long. I went to the parks and like in the evening to film videos, and I covered the hotel. I need light to show things. So I would get up in the morning when it wasn't as hot yet, you know, so there's a lot to factor in when you go to the Orlando parks.
And can you share some of your most surprising discoveries about theme parks that many visitors might not even know about?
I think what people tend to forget when they're going to theme parks, especially if it's their first time, you know, everyone's goal, I feel like, is, okay, we got to get everything done. We got to get everything done. And I get that feeling, because I'm also that person sometimes. I want to like be able to, you know, get everything done. I want to experience everything. I think what's important to remember is that I always say, make your must-do list. Make your absolute must-do, and then everything else is like a happy surprise, right? And I think because if you're rushing and you're rushing and you're rushing, you kind of miss out on those special things that are happening. My favorite thing in the parks, now that I have, you know, exhausted myself into them, is kind of just like sitting and just being in the environment and hearing the music and the background that's playing and whatever land you're in and having a snack or seeing, you know, I think seeing shows in parks is something that people tend to maybe miss out on. And I think, like, especially Universal has some incredible shows. And I think, like, they have a show called The Bourne Stuntacular, which when I took my friends came from New York this past year, we saw it twice. They loved it so much. It's so good. It's like this 25-minute incredible production stunt show where they use they obviously actors and stunt performers, and they utilize real sets and props, and they mix it in with this incredibly amazing curved screen behind you. So there's like sets that look real even though they're not, and then there's pieces in front of it. Take time. I think that's like really what I love to try to get people to do. It's just like, go sit, watch a show, go sit, watch a parade, just, you know, have a drink, like just kind of, just like absorb the environment. Remember, this is your vacation. You don't have to rush because you don't, you know, at the end of the vacation, you're going to be exhausted, right? So take those moments to, like, you know, in between, to not like overdo it, and just kind of just sit there and take it in and enjoy the ambiance of it all. You know, sometimes you'll even like find, you know, you can be sitting there and all of a sudden, like, Goofy and Max walk by and they're just like doing something cute and adorable, and you just kind of get to see it because you're sitting there. Or you're in Universal and then all of a sudden like funny janitors like walk by and do like little shtick bits, and you know, it's fun. Like, you know, you just kind of just being in the environment is something that I wish people would just kind of just stop and take a breath. Enjoy your time there, and again, have your must-dos, but just enjoy your, if you're there with your family, if you're there with your partner, if you're there solo. I'm in the park solo all the time. I always recommend solo traveling. I think it's so great for people to do. Just sit there and just be in the moment is such a great thing to do in those parks, because you're just immersed into these places and the outside world doesn't exist for a few minutes.
And you talking about enjoying the moment and, you know, having fun. Now, with your line of work, you are creating content and on the side, and then there's time where you have to enjoy it. How do you balance the two?
Oh, no, I'm not really. Well, okay. No, I'm always enjoying when I'm there. I am so fortunate to be able to do what I do, but I'm not going down, you know, for vacation unless it's something planned, like when my friends came down during Horror Nights this year. But I went down first, and I was there, and actually they came down kind of early, and I was like, well, okay, I'll take you around the park today. I was like camp counselor Demi, and, you know, I was like, okay, but at 3 o'clock, you're on your own. I made my husband in charge, who's gotten pretty good at Universal at this point. but he doesn't really come down that often with me anyway. He's not there while I'm working. He'll only come down for like certain things, right? But I was like, I have to cover Horror Nights. I have to work. And then I cover Horror Nights. And then I was up all night working, and I get the video out the next day. Whenever there's like a big event, I cover it, and then I work through the night to get the video out the next day, right? So unless I'm actually dedicating time for vacation, I'm not really vacationing. I, like this past year, it was my 30th birthday, and I said to my husband, I was like, you know, is it weird if, would it be funny if like we just went to Disney, but like I didn't bring anything to film and we just actually had like a Disney vacation? And my husband doesn't really go to Disney that much. He has an annual pass for Universal because it's so cheap to have an annual pass there, but it's really expensive to go to Disney. And I have my IncrediPass, which I didn't even realize I'm paying for like the highest tier pass. And really I could be paying for the one below it. And the highest tier they only give you like after Thanksgiving or Thanksgiving weekend and the last 2 weeks of the year. And I never usually am there the last 2 weeks of the year, but my birthday is December 20th. So I was like, let's go. Like, we'll go. I won't film. I've made so many friends down there. I would love to celebrate with them as well. I had a party here, and you know, I just want to like be with my friends, be with my husband, be in the moment. And it was the greatest actually thing that I've done, because I found like my, not that I lost my love for the parks, but like when you're just there and you're not worrying about filming something, or, you know, you're not, I'm creating like 3 to 4 videos per day, unless it's like a big festival day or something where I'm covering something on the day. It was great. Like you like rediscover things. It actually gave me ideas for future videos because, you know, you're just kind of there and taking in the moment. And then while I am there, when I am filming and I'm there for work, like I have recently been trying to be better about not overworking myself. Like I am 30 now. I'm not going to lie. I started this when I was 26 years old, right? Or 25? 25. Oh my gosh, I was 25. Oh gosh, I was 25 years old. And the jump from 25 to 30, like, honestly makes a difference. Like, it's a lot of hard work to be walking 20,000 steps a day and filming and talking into the camera all day. So I have been trying to recently been, you know, taking more time in between, you know, sitting and taking in those little moments. But, you know, I am also in the back of my head, like, you got to get up. You got to start working. Stop this, you know. And so it's hard because, you know, my time is limited when I'm there and I want to be able to make sure I get all the content that I need to bring back home and release. So, you know, and I'm also not only just doing it for YouTube, but I'm also doing it for TikTok and for Instagram. And I haven't even announced this yet, but, you know, why not? I'll do it here. I'm now starting a podcast with my friend Joey Nolfi, who's an entertainment journalist. I have to be careful on his title. And we're calling it the Park Peeps Podcast. And we're going to be talking to people in the park space and our takes on parks on top of my channel. So I am now diving into the podcast world. So now I have to do even more content. I have my Patreon, which I love my Patreon community. They are incredible humans and do exclusive lives on there. And I have exclusive videos. So I have to come up with exclusive videos for them. So it's a lot of content to create in such short times while I'm there. I really do try my very best to take it in, but I always do like to be able to have those days where, like, you know, if I know if like my husband comes down, I'm going to have like a day where, like, okay, we're not filming. It's just, we're going to be in the moment together and enjoy the parks. And those are the best days, obviously, for me, because, you know, as much as I, again, love to create, just being able to be in the moment in the parks is the best thing.
And what would you say is your personal favorite theme park experience that you think is kind of underrated?
Oh, that's so hard. I mean, I guess in regards to Disney and Universal, I mean, I will say, like, you know, Busch Gardens, I will say this, I know it's not like an experience, but like Busch Gardens Williamsburg is, I think, an incredible regional park. And I've been there 4 times throughout my life. I went once with my mom and her friends. I went for my 8th grade field trip. I went with my husband twice in our almost decade of being together. It's such a beautiful park. They have incredible coasters. It's such a beautiful area. I wish people would start going to regional parks a little bit more as like a destination. Hershey Park as well. I think people think of it as a regional park, but really it's a resort and there's so much to do up there. But I guess like if you're thinking of like smaller scale of like, you know, what's like underrated in like Disney, Universal, you know, it's hard to say. I would say maybe something like, you know, taking the time to go to Hoop-Dee-Doo Review over at Fort Wilderness, which is at Disney, is a Disney resort. It's a musical review. Like it's very campy and you're eating and you're watching the show and it's a very unique experience, you know, something like that. And I honestly, I'm going to say it again. The Bourne Stuntacular is like my favorite show in all, like in all theme parks. It's like criminally good. I wish that we had something like it in New York. Like, it's kind of insane that we don't. I think that, and just like seeing like the other shows too, like the Blues Brothers are so fun at Universal. Like, you know, the over in Diagon Alley, the tale of the three brothers with the puppets are beautiful. I think it's those little things where it's like, yes, of course, these rides are unbelievable that you're going on. Like, they're some of the best rides in the world, right? But it's those little like things that you just kind of see around the parks that make everything kind of great. I guess also for Disney, I would say it is a ride, but in the Disney community, we all know this, but maybe if you were a first timer, you may not even think to go on it. But there's this ride in Magic Kingdom called the People Mover, and Disneyland doesn't have theirs anymore. And we have ours, and it's literally this just little ride that goes around Tomorrowland. You have like your own little cart. It's a cushioned seat. You go inside of Space Mountain. You go inside of Buzz Lightyear's Space Ranger Spin, and it's just like relaxing. You can take a nap. You can kind of just you just take it all in, just like relax for a few minutes. It's like one of my favorite things to do in all of the parks. I think, yeah, you can go on Space Mountain, which is one of my favorite rides of all time. Yeah, you can go do Buzz Lightyear, but like you could also just like sit. And, you know, it's just like those little things where just, you know, I think people need to kind of like take into account while they're vacationing.
I love that, Demi. And taking us back to regional parks for a second, I know you've been to Lancaster, you've been to Dutch Wonderland, you've been to Hershey Park. I would be amiss to not ask if you have or have plans to go to Kennywood at some point.
You know, that's so funny that you say that, because my podcast partner, Joey, is Pittsburgh-based. We are definitely going to be talking about Kennywood on the pod, but I have not been. But now that I have, you know, Joey there, like, you know, Pittsburgh's so far. Like, I can't drive there. I barely want to drive to Hershey Park, which is 4 hours away. I hate driving. Listen, I'm a New Yorker. I didn't get my license until I was 21 years old, and it was only because I was forced to, okay? But I 100%, like I want to go to every park in the world. Like, that's my thing. I want to see every park. And now that I have Joey there, like that's definitely something I would love to experience, because I know it's a very like it was a very beloved park, and I know that there's like some things about it now that aren't the same, and I would love to kind of see how that all kind of comes together.
I will say, as someone who formerly lived in New York, who currently lives in Pittsburgh, and I was just looking at flights, there are $60 flights from LaGuardia to Pittsburgh.
Yes.
And if you do make it out here, let me know. I would happily take you to Kennywood.
Oh, I love that. Absolutely. I as soon as I can, like, you know, it's lights, yes, but it's the transportation outside of Orlando is so different everywhere else. Like, I still haven't been to Dollywood, which is one of like the, you know, biggest non-Disney Universal parks that you could go to, like one of the best in the world, right? But because it's for some reason, like for New Yorkers, like to save money, you would have to go to Newark so that you could fly Allegiant, so that it's not like a $500 plane ticket. It's like insane to like go to Knoxville because it's a small airport. Then once you get to Knoxville, it's like an hour away. So it's like you have to rent a car for that one, really, to make it make sense. It's a lot of costs, it's a lot of time to go there. So that's why I haven't done it yet. But I definitely, after this year, you know, with the opening of Epic Universe, it's kind of like the biggest focus as creators for me right now, because there's so much. We have opening of Terra Luna Resort on the 25th, which I'll be covering on March 25th. And then Helios Grand Hotel is the hotel that's inside of Epic Universe, which opens with Epic Universe on May 22nd. So once I kind of do, you know, maybe after this year, or at least maybe after like first like few months, I definitely want to go back to doing some more regional, like a couple, like when I went to Busch Gardens, I also got to go to King's Dominion. When I went to California, I also got to go to Knott's Berry Farm, which I loved so much. I also got to go to SeaWorld in San Diego, because I like randomness had a wedding in San Diego. No one lives in San Diego. We all live in New York, but they just decided we're going to have this wedding in San Diego. So I was like, well, I guess I'm get to check off another theme park off my bucket list while we're doing that. So I love just doing that. Like, regardless of, you know, in the world of content, definitely people care the most about Disney and care the most about Universal. But I don't care. I love covering those smaller parks. And it's funny, I say I don't like to drive, like I don't want to drive, but I would love someone else to drive and do just like a road trip of theme parks, like is my dream.
We'll all go with you. I think that's what's happening here, right? I think you're inviting us now, Demi. I think that's what's happening, right?
Oh, if someone wants to drive, absolutely.
Cody, you're driving us?
I had plans to go to Gatlinburg anyways, so.
Lydia, you're flying to the States. You're going to go with us.
I'm definitely there. Please pack me in there.
Demi, you've discussed this whole time about creating all the different content with your Patreon, and now you're starting a podcast, YouTube, Instagram, social media, TikTok. You have a lot of feedback from this community that you've built, and you've discussed this whole community. What is the biggest thing that you have learned about, whether it's a life lesson? Like I was saying to myself, Demi's dropping some serious life lessons, like taking it all in, just breathe, or that's like serious, like financial tips. What is the biggest takeaway that you've had from this whole experience of magical hijinks? And what do you want to use for the future to grow this brand in the future?
What surprised me the most is all of the different people that I have come across, whether it's in person that come up to me in the parks or online. For those of us that are in New York, you know, I think we live in a very special place. I think we forget that it's so different outside of here. I really had such a culture shock. I think that it was, you know, I'm learning like what people have by them and what they think is exciting to them is different maybe for us. Like, for example, like Epcot's World Showcase. I have, as much as I enjoy Epcot and I love World Showcase, there are certain things about it that bother me. And it's the fact that the countries, you know, some of the food or whatever it is not authentic. Like, for example, the China Pavilion, you know, as someone who, like, you know, I love going to Flushing and getting like real Chinese food. And even though I also love Americanized Chinese food, I think that, you know, like I don't, if I'm going to Epcot and the whole point is supposed to be, you know, for authentic things and for people to feel like they're in the countries, why are you serving like Panda Express food? You know, but to some people, like they don't even really have that, you know, outside of New York. And it's like, you know, I never really thought about it. Like, you know, maybe somewhere in the Midwest, like, you know, they don't have like just Chinese food, or they think, you know, maybe I may not be the biggest fan of Via Napoli in Epcot, the pizza place, because like, you know, not even talking about New York style pizza, but like we have Italian style pizza here as well. And I think that obviously ours is better, as you know, it's not like theirs is like that bad, but like people love Via Napoli, and it's you know, maybe because they don't have what we have here. And I think it's really opened my eyes of how I do my own content, because I think I came in to the space, you know, as a very jaded New Yorker, and I've just learned so much. Like, and I've also learned a lot from people who have kids. Like I was actually lucky to take my cousin and his two girls when they were 4 and 1 to Disney. I got to like basically plan their trip and like be their tour guide so that they had the most amazing time. And it was such a special vacation for me to be able to do that for them. They are just the most wonderful little girls. But it was my first time with kids, and you know, you just do those parks so different when you have kids. Hearing from people online, like I was covering a hotel once. I'll never forget this, and now I think about it all the time. I covered a hotel and someone commented, we stayed there and unfortunately the blackout curtains just didn't close well enough and there was too much light coming in and my kid couldn't take a nap. And I was like, oh my God, you know, that never even occurred to me. So I love the fact that my eyes have kind of been able to be open to so many different experiences, and I get to learn about that, and then I get to kind of gear my content toward maybe some things that I thought maybe like I never even thought would be a thing.
They say as you go along, you learn a little bit. And we're all learning. And we thank you, Demi, for what you taught us today about vacationing, traveling, the theme parks, all the good stuff. Where can the folks listening into this program find you?
You can find me on YouTube and all social media. I'm on Instagram, TikTok, on Threads, on Blue Sky, on Facebook, at Magical Hijinks, on everything, MagicalHijinx. And yeah, subscribe. If you're planning a trip to the parks, my videos will very much help you. I cover everything from, you know, dining tips to snack videos to hotel reviews to how to use lightning lanes and general planning. And sometimes even in the videos where I'm like, here, like just here's like maybe like my day type of a video, or just like, you know, whatever, an adjacent type thing where it's like, here's a day in the park. I'm giving you so many tips that will help you when you are there as well. And you also just get to escape into the parks a little bit. And it's honestly so great to just turn your brain off and pretend you're in a park.
You've been listening to the One World Radio Show on the One World Community Radio Network, broadcasting from WRHU, Radio Hofstra University, Bush Radio, the mother of community radio in Cape Town, South Africa, and WRCT, Radio Carnegie Tech. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to One World Radio, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU, Radio Hofstra University, Hempstead, New York. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you next week as we celebrate the power of radio in our one world. Tot ziens julle.
Hi, this is Kenny.
And Amanda Smith from Nashville, Tennessee.
Keep it right here on WRCT Pittsburgh.
This is McGruff the Crime Dog with an important message. Before you think about buying counterfeit products, think again. You're smart, buy smart. Go for real. Learn more at McGruffPSA.org. This message is brought to you by the United States Patent and Trademark Office and the National Crime Prevention Council.
You are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, and welcome to this week's edition of Ebony Spectrum. We have several items this week to reflect on what's happening in the news.
Kamala Harris unveiled a new economic plan to provide more opportunities for black men, part of the Democrats' broader effort to secure the black vote. Theodore R. Johnson is an expert on this issue. His new book, If We Are Brave, Essays from Black Americana, tackles race and democracy. And he joins Michelle Martin to take us through those firsthand accounts.
Thanks, Christian. Theodore Johnson, thank you so much for joining us once again.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
You're kind of a different animal when it comes to, you know, sort of punditry per se. I mean, you know, 20-year Navy veteran. You are a columnist for major news outlets, and you're an author. So it's kind of hard to pigeonhole you, just like it's kind of hard to pigeonhole this book. Like, how do you describe it? What do you think this book does?
The book is an essay collection in sort of the traditional sense of the term for Black writers in particular. I mean, it's probably too much praise, but I think of it in the same vein of writing as like the Harlem Renaissance and the essayists of the Civil Rights Movement that were very rigorous in their journalism, in their research, but had a common touch in how they relayed very complicated and complex issues to a general public. So I sort of think of my career as providing the perfect background or a set of life experiences that allow me to tackle big topics in essay form while also incorporating the very rigorously researched insights that I hope to bring forward in the writing.
I see it as reflections on what it means to be an American. It's reflections on democracy, but from a very distinctly African-American, you know, perspective. Why did you feel we need to have these conversations right now?
Yeah, so most of it is because there seems to be a fight over the identity of this country and the people that belong here. Some folks want to take us back hundreds of years, and others say we've actually not realized the potential of the country. And so maybe we should be doing the work to get us to that place, which will require, an engagement with the idea, the identity, our history, and sort of meditate on what does it mean to belong in this country. So it tries to take big ideas, democracy, affirmative action, police brutality, racism. And instead of talking about structural racism or the need for criminal justice reform, I wanted to talk about the experience of people in this system, the experience of Americans, white, black, all races, ethnicities. All of us are living in the same system that's underperforming what it could be.
One of the interesting things you do, though, in the book is you kind of compare the experience of understanding your Americanness. And you compare that in your experience with being a person of faith. And then you kind of draw that as an analogy to how we kind of fall in and out of love, if I can put it that way, with the democratic experiment, with the American idea. Do you want to talk more about that?
Yeah, and so you're absolutely right. The first essay, the lead essay, is essentially Ted Johnson's sermon on democracy as delivered by this black boy from North Carolina who grew up going to church three or four times a week. And so it's almost like this is my conversion story for why I believe democracy is the way forward in America. And the reason that's important is because democracy's legitimacy as a system writ large, is an article of faith on every person who participates in that democracy. If you don't believe that the outcomes of the democracy are legitimate, it results in catastrophe. We don't have to guess at this. We were all around for January 6th. We saw what happened when the legitimacy of institutions and processes are questioned. People die, systems get overturned or unraveled. And so we have to believe the system is worth investing in if we're going to commit to the work of making it more inclusive and to the work of reforming it. If you don't believe that democracy is the answer, it's very hard to get people to invest in voting, to invest in the political system and its outcomes, to see those outcomes as legitimate. And that if we're committed to both the country and the process for improving the country, then outcomes can be better than if we don't believe in the country and believe that the system is no longer useful. Then we're at a different starting point, which could turn very ugly very quickly.
Well, I can make an argument that it's already turned very ugly very quickly if you consider that on January 6th, people died. You know, we're really lucky that more people didn't die, but a lot of people were hurt. A lot of people, particularly our first responders, lost their careers, if not their lives, because they were so badly injured they couldn't work again.
It's ugly. But in the 1960s, a president was assassinated. A attorney general and presidential candidate was assassinated. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, assassinated. Medgar Evers, assassinated. Hundreds of protests in the summer of 68. The Vietnam War protests where students at Kent State were killed. So if we think January 6th was bad, our grandparents would say, children, you have seen nothing yet. And this book is both a meditation on democracy, but also a warning that if we don't heed history, if we don't heed the life experiences of those who came before us, we, as the old saying goes, we are doomed to repeat these things. And January 6th then, instead of becoming this this terrible day following a presidential election, mm-hmm. becomes the beginning of a terrible decade, like the 60s, like the 1860s. And we've got an opportunity to avoid that outcome, but only if we get ahead of the problem now.
I want to read something from the book. You say you're talking about your plea, your desire that people engage in this reimagination, as you put it. You said, reimagination, however, is tricky business. It arises from the premise that who we are is no longer sufficient or is deeply flawed in some way. Ego, whether personal or national, does not mm-hmm. like confronting the truth. It's uncomfortable and invites an identity crisis. When a nation as large and diverse as the United States is overdue for a reimagination, those at the center of the national narrative are likely to feel threatened. I mean, you can understand why people who have been historically left out of the national narrative want in. But why should the people you're talking about here, who see themselves as threatened or on the being displaced or not wanting to be dominated, why should they participate in this kind of reimagination that you talk about?
Well, if they truly believe in the founding ideals of the country, not lip service stuff, but if they truly believe in it, they don't have a choice. I think Jill Lepore, the historian, has said that in the first presidential election in 1790, 6% of the people in this country were eligible to vote, and only half of them did. The story of our democracy is the story of excluded people seeking participation. And when they are denied that participation, they are also Americans. And Americans don't take lightly to be told, you're less than, you don't get to have freedom, it's just for these other people. You don't get to have liberty and rights or access to democracies for other people. So if they do not make democracy a more inviting exercise, if they do not make the country more inclusive, they will have to contend with the people they've excluded outside of democracy. We've had a civil war to answer this question. We've had a civil rights movement to answer these questions. People were lynched trying to get a better answer out of this question. Suffragists, abused and beaten trying to get better answers out of this question. But what never stops is the sort of spirit of progress. The second part of this, which sort of follows from the first, because we're a nation of 50 million people. And if you think that democracy is only for 70% of those 350 million people, you squander massive amounts of talent and capabilities of your populace. Countries do not thrive when they squander the thing that makes them special, unique, which is to say they're people. So not only will those people not stand idly by, but those at the top that want a prosperous America or want to sort of hog the benefits of this country for themselves will find that there's less benefits, less resources, less good feelings to go around when exclusion is your politics.
But what about people who just don't see it that way and seem to believe, whether through force, through violence, through the ballot box, through domination, some kind of way that their narrowing of the American story is going to continue to prevail? What do you say to that?
Yeah, so the first thing is on January 7th, January 8th, January 9th, a lot of the people saying that 2020 was an undecided election or a fraudulent election, on January 7th, 8th, and 9th, they were saying, how dare Donald Trump? You know, this is beyond the pale. This is too far. And then what they learned was you don't get reelected. You don't have a chance in the Republican Party.
You are listening to The Sound of Language on WRCT Pittsburgh. Produced by the students in Contextual Practice Seminar. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily express those of WRCT Pittsburgh or its members.
Hello, my name is Ashley. I am a first-year MFA student. So for this audio piece, I would like to talk about something that is very real for all of us, something that we all deal with, I think, at least periodically, either throughout the week, months, or years. It's something that comes across one's life ever so often, and that is the topic of anxiety. Anxiety is something that I've dealt with, honestly, throughout my entire life. There have been situations, just life circumstances, that have created moments of anxiety and anxiousness as I have navigated or had to have navigated through life, whether that's systematically, societally, economically, all the things that make life what it is. Anxiety has been there. It's almost like, I mean, it's not really a friend in the way that it makes you feel, but it's one of the earliest memories of a feeling that I've had. Since moving to Pittsburgh and by myself and having to confront anxiety, having to confront what it's like moving to a place by yourself and not really around anybody that you know, and what it's like to rebuild again. The topic of anxiety and that feeling has grown. It's been a mixture of both anxiousness, excitement, and wonder about the possibilities here, but anxiety has seemed to always creep its way in. Even more so, I think about anxiety in relation to my art practice realistically, and how my certain ideas of anxiousness have creeped into that part of my being as well, feeling displaced in a way visually, and how I respond to the world around me has slowly, you know, creeped into my art practice. It's something that I am currently fighting through, as all artists have to deal with. We all have to deal with moments of pause, moments of reflection, moments of, I don't know what I'm doing right now. So, you know, in full transparency, that's where I am right now as I am navigating my first year in a grad program. You know, some artists who I admire also, you know, we navigate all of these things differently because we're all different people. For me, how I've navigated this has been to pause and really trying to search for what it is that I'm looking for in this experience. Because I, outside of grad school, outside of the people that you meet, the studio visits, the networks that are potentially there, the residencies, the grants, this really is our time. These are some of the most important years that we will have